smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
As much as we love dogs, and Lord knows we all love dogs, you always run into a dog who behaves in a way that almost makes you embarrassed for the species, right? Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Good Dog Podcast, where we are welcoming back Trish King, who's the Director of Behavior and Training at the Marin Humane Society and the author of Parenting Your Dog. Welcome, Trish.
Thank you. Hi, and welcome to you.
Well, you deal with dogs all the time who have poor behavior, right?
Yes, I do.
And people come to you and say, help, help me to improve the behavior of my dog. So first of all, my question is, are you training the dog or are you training the person?
That's a very good question. Actually, a lot of times you're working with a relationship. So it's not just the dog and it's not just the person. It's both.
So you really have to work with both. I've interviewed trainers who say it's really about helping people to understand how dogs communicate and how they hear you. But it isn't just that, right?
No, it's not. I mean, dogs have to learn how to communicate just like people do. And if they learn the wrong way, then you could let them communicate like crazy and they would communicate wrong. So sometimes you have to actually help a dog either learn or gain back some communication processes, if you will. And sometimes you have to teach the people that that dog is not necessarily going to behave in a way that they find acceptable all the time. And they're going to have to do something to manage it, manage the dog, make sure that everything is okay, is safe and pleasant for everyone.
Would you say that the old adage of you can't teach an old dog new tricks is a myth?
No, you can teach an old dog new tricks. What you can't do is work against their genetics, and you can't work too much against their really early experiences. If a dog, for instance, has had a trauma when it was very young, say 3 or 4 months, then it's never going to forget that because it's not in the same part of the brain as the conscious thoughts are. It's kept in the amygdala, and you don't have access to the amygdala. So, you know, it's as though if you were in a fire when you were 3 years old, you're going to remember that all of your life, and you'd probably be afraid of fires. You might not even remember the actual episode. You just remember that you're afraid of fires. So if a dog has a very bad experience, and it has to be bad according to the dog, I mean, to us it may not be that big of a deal. To them it might be a very big deal indeed. So, for instance, a dog that's jumped by another dog. And the other dog didn't mean anything by it, but this is a very young puppy, and it's a trauma. And that puppy might be afraid of dogs who look like that for the rest of its life, and you have to work against that. So, you know, one of the things that bothers me is that people seem to think that dogs are these malleable creatures and you can change their behavior completely. We can't even change our own behavior completely.
So true. So what does this say, though, about the whole notion of adopting dogs and rescuing dogs? Often what you're getting is a dog that has some sort of problem.
Yeah, we used to say that you're getting a broken dog, but that's not actually true.
Used dog, right?
Yeah, a used dog with some things that are already built into the dog. So in many cases, the dog might have just a very small behavior problem or none at all. And perhaps as far as adoption is concerned, maybe somebody just had to move and leave their dog. And sometimes they leave the dog because the dog is not behaving in a way that they want the dog to behave. But that doesn't mean it won't behave in the way I want it to behave. For instance, my Cairn Terrier is, you know, she's obnoxious to most people, but she's very much under control. She's a very cute little dog.
Well, what kind of obnoxious behavior?
Oh, when she was first surrendered, she was aggressive to the children in the household. She was very possessive aggressive, and she would run down the block going lickety-split and bite people on their ankles.
How did you get her to stop doing that?
Well, I did a lot of management, so she wasn't allowed out on leash, off-leash, so she couldn't go and bite anybody on their ankles.
Step one, right?
Yeah. And then I retrained the possession. I can still make her be possessive if I want to, but I never want to. So normally what I do is just, train my way around that. And the aggression to the kids was because she's not a golden retriever. And they were treating her like a dog that can handle a lot of physicality. The children wanted to pick her up and dress her and do those kinds of things. Well, this is a terrier. And some terriers will allow that, and other terriers say, are you kidding? There's no way I'm going to let you do that.
So this is a perfect opportunity to stop for just a moment and to say, to scream, to underline it, to put it in bold and italics and every other way that we can get people to pay attention. If you're thinking of getting a family dog, a dog for young children, it's really important what breed you select.
Oh, it's very, very important. And not only the breed, the dog itself. A lot of people think that they can change all dogs. But, you know, people get married to a husband or a wife and think they can change them, too.
Spoken like a woman who's been married.
I mean, it's amazing how we think that we're so godlike that we can do that. Now, I don't want to give the impression that you can't change dogs. You can. You can, but you have to do it within their capacity.
Well, and not just that, but you have to be committed to the process.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And you have to practice. You can't, I've never understood how people send their dogs off to a trainer and then think that they're going to get a perfect dog back in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks and not have to practice those behaviors.
Well, it's kind of the throw money at the dog problem.
Kind of like joining a gym and not actually going, but you figure if you write the check, you're going to get the benefits.
Yeah, that's right. It's very much along those lines. And the thing about training a dog with a problem is that it does take a lot of effort, and it takes way longer than you want it to take. Most people would like to come to see me, for instance, and to walk out the door with no problems, you know, having me just put my blessing on the dog.
It's like a metaphor for life, isn't it?
Yeah, but they have to go out and they have to work. Now, every once in a while, just to let you know, I had a consultation very, very recently where someone came in saying that their dog had horrible separation anxiety and they didn't know what to do about it because the dog was a basket case and shaking and quivering and all kinds of stuff. And when she walked out, she was grinning all over her face because the dog didn't have separation anxiety, and we fixed the problem. So sometimes we can actually do that.
How did you do that?
Well, in that case, the dog didn't have separation anxiety. The dog was a controller. And so the dog felt that she had to control where the woman was at all times. So wherever the woman was, the dog was. But the dog was not anxious because she couldn't be alone. She was anxious because the woman, her owner, was a member of her pack, and the dog was supposed to be taking care of her. So once we flipped that around and said, no, you don't get this. I'm the person, I take care of you. And you do that with a variety of different things, including teaching the dog that she has to be alone. Then you can fix the problem very, very quickly.
And then the dog would relax.
Oh, then the dog, you could actually see the dog relax in my office.
Much better than drugs.
Oh, yeah. And the dog, the vet had suggested possibly some drugs, but luckily he suggested that she come to see me first. And
can we send our children to you as well?
I had two of those today. And but at any rate, we put the dog on what's called a tie-down or a tether, a very short leash, and we didn't allow the woman to touch the dog, and she couldn't look at the dog, and the dog, within about 5 minutes, went to sleep.
Amazing. Let's talk about doggy etiquette and what is appropriate behavior for dogs. Where do you draw the line in behavior that's really obnoxious and needs to be controlled?
Well, I think it's very much like perhaps children. You know, if I don't mind, for instance, I do, but if I was a person who didn't mind if my dog jumped up on me and all that kind of thing, you know, maybe mouthed me and wanted to move me around and all that, if I didn't mind that, that would be okay. But the line comes when it affects other people and or other dogs.
So, for instance, I have a tiny little dog, as you well know. Lulu is about 15 pounds. And when she jumps up on you, she doesn't get very far. She about hits your shin, which tends to not be as annoying as an 80-pound dog jumping on you. Also not as dangerous. She doesn't knock anyone over, even a small child. So is that obnoxious behavior?
Well, it would depend on who I am, wouldn't it?
Right.
If I'm walking into your door, into your house, and I have nylons on, and I don't particularly care for little dogs.
Do people still wear nylons?
I do believe they do.
Okay, just checking.
Not perhaps in your world and not perhaps in my world, but they do definitely do. But the little dog's nails can wreck the nylon.
Right.
And now you have what is perceived as an obnoxious dog.
Right.
Because it's to somebody else.
Absolutely.
The same thing is true with other dogs. If my dog wants to run and meet your dog and go lickety-split and just race right into him, my dog might be saying, I'm terribly friendly, but your dog might be saying, I'm terrified and I'm going to run away, or I don't like dogs jumping into me and I'm going to bite you.
Right. So it's about teaching the dog the limits.
Right. It's teaching limits and understanding that your limits and other people's limits might not be the same.
So jumping on people's a big one. How do you teach a dog not to jump on people?
Well, it's a very good question, because the biggest problem is not the dog, it's the people. Most people who have a jumping up dog allow the dog to jump up sometimes.
Sometimes, and sometimes is very different than all the time.
Right. But sometimes that's called intermittent reinforcement. And so if you allow the dog to jump up sometimes, then the dog will continue to do it because it's very reinforcing to the dog. Dog likes it. It's fun to do, and it gets some attention, which they also like. So it's like begging at the table. If you allow begging at the table, or you give a dog a treat from the table once every 3 weeks, you'll never get rid of the behavior. You have to either totally stop it or totally allow it. So with jumping up, dad comes home from work, dog jumps up on him, licks him all over the place, and he loves it because the dog is the only one who likes that he comes home. But mom comes home, and she's got a bag full of groceries and a kid in one arm, and the dog jumps all over her, and she doesn't like it, so she wants to stop the behavior. So she comes and sees me and says, I got to stop the behavior, and I go, but I'm sorry, it's not going to work, because your husband still lets it happen.
You can't teach a dog, for instance, that something's okay with dad and not with mom, because certainly with kids you can, right? Wrestling and roughhousing is okay with dad and often not okay with mom or sister or other people.
You can teach some dogs. There are some dogs who are intelligent enough to get that, different behaviors with different people are okay. You can also get a dog to kind of be afraid of one person and therefore not go and jump up on them. The best thing to do is to teach the dog to greet politely, which would be sitting down. So when they greet a person, to sit politely. And then to teach them to jump up on cue, which is really easy to teach because it's a natural behavior. So you just pat your chest and you say, up, and they come up and then you pet them. Then they go off again. You can say off and they go and you just tell them sit. And then you go up, they come up again. And then so the dog now knows that it can do this behavior, but only on invitation. So then if you can teach dad to come home and say, up, then you've solved the problem.
Interesting. So should you reward them initially for staying and not jumping?
Oh, yes, it's a very good idea to do that because you're working against genetics. So whenever you're working against the genetic grain, you need to have pretty nice rewards for the dog.
And Trish, do you advocate rewarding with food or what?
Well, it depends on what the dog likes.
Don't they all love food?
No, actually, some dogs don't like food. I mean, they're picky about it. They'll eat to keep their body and soul together. So those dogs might just adore being petted or me being roughhoused with, Some dogs very much like treats, and those are the easiest ones to teach. It's easiest to teach with treats because we can always have treats around. But life rewards are perfectly fine, and that would be petting or playing tug-of-war, tossing a ball. All those things are good rewards. And they're part of positive reinforcement.
Is the optimum time to teach and train a dog when they are pups?
Yes, it is. Because they will retain a lot of those behaviors through their adult life, which is not to say you can't change the behavior of older dogs. It just takes a little bit longer, and they might tend to return to the older behaviors if you don't keep it up. There's something called instinctive drift. And that means that, if you're teaching against genetics, so you're teaching a stay, which is totally against the dog's genetics, only if they want to stay, then if you don't work on it every once in a while, it'll go away. The dog won't do it anymore because there's this instinctive drift.
Another behavior that can be annoying in dogs is barking. Often they're barking because they're alerting you to some danger, or they're just reacting to the fact that someone is outside the house, or a dog is walking by, or a squirrel is up in the tree. But that behavior can be very annoying, particularly people who live in close proximity to others, in apartment buildings, that sort of thing. Is there a way to control that?
Well, barking, I joke about it a lot. Barking is probably the hardest behavior to modify because it's so ingrained. You can often teach a dog to bark just once or twice. I actually, when I do talks around the country, a lot of times with dog trainers, I'll ask them how many of them have successfully trained their dogs not to bark when somebody comes to the door. And not very many have. Now, what most of us do is we train the dog to bark just a couple times then to come to us. But that first alarm, you know, when somebody comes and knocks on the door, that one is almost impossible to stop because the dog is acting out of instinct.
Now, that one is not so annoying because you're being, it's like a doorbell. You're
right.
Being informed. It's middle of the night when a cat walks by on the top of the fence of our next door neighbor and Lulu is up and just barking incessantly at this cat.
That would be management. That would be, because it's middle of the night, it's not usually a good training opportunity.
Right.
So you would.
Well, middle of our night anyway.
Middle of your night, yes. But it's not a good training opportunity. So what you would do is you would not let her be able to see that cat. So you could keep her in a crate or you could keep her someplace where she doesn't look out a window. And, you know, or even, well, I don't want to, wouldn't suggest a tie down beside your bed. Just essentially a crate or someplace, you know, where the stimulation of seeing something move around in the middle of the night, you know, she doesn't know what it is.
Right.
As far as she's concerned, it's a boogeyman.
Right.
And so she's going to say, Mom, Dad, look, oh, my gosh, something's coming. Oh, my gosh, you know.
Right.
Because that's her job. That's what we bred dogs for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
So how long do you have to keep her, for instance, crated before she gets that she doesn't need to do that? Or could that even be a permanent state of affairs?
It could be a permanent state of affairs. If you really wanted to work with her, then what you might do is as soon as she starts, you have to be prepared, though. She starts barking, you get up, you go take back the window. So you go up and you kind of go to the window and you move her back with your body. And then you can pop her in the crate for 15 minutes, then let her back out, do it again, let her back out, do it again. And this is why people don't like to keep on training their dogs for this kind of thing, because there you are in the middle of the night trying to help your dog learn not to bark.
Actually, I think curtains are probably a much better idea.
I think curtains are just a really good idea.
Absolutely.
And actually, we recommend a lot this kind of material that looks like stained glass windows that you get at Home Depot and places like that, that just kind of sticks to the lower part of your window.
And that's enough in many cases.
Yep. It's totally enough.
Excellent. That's a great tip. So etiquette is in the mind of the beholder.
Right. But what we teach our dogs to do, and, you know, I actually use an awful lot of comparisons to raising a family, and what I generally say is you would never have your kid take candy from a stranger. So why are you allowing your dog to run up to every strange dog? You don't know what they're like, or every strange person. Why don't you teach your dog to sit first and wait until you give them permission? That's good etiquette no matter what.
Right.
So, you know, I think that in our area, at least, people say, oh, my dog is friendly. He wants to meet every other dog or every person. And that's just wonderful. But every other person or dog does not necessarily have to meet your dog.
It's an important lesson.
Mm-hmm. And it's one that I keep telling people over and over and over again. It goes right along with my dog has to go to the dog park and be socialized even though he's 8 years old. An 8-year-old dog is like a 50-year-old man.
They don't need to be socialized?
They don't have to be socialized. No.
Interesting. Trish, thanks so much for these insights on doggy etiquette.
You're very welcome.
And once again, Trish King is Director of Behavior and Training at the Marin Humane Society in Novato, California, and as well the author of Parenting Your Dog. I'm Joanne Green, inviting you to browse through all of the options for entertainment and information at smarterpodcasts.com.